With the 50th anniversary celebration of the Stonewall riots underway, it's tempting to romanticize the watershed moment as a time when folks all over the world suddenly came out of the closet to let their freak flag fly freely. But folks have been rebels just for kicks since 1969 now, and they feel it still.
Whatever. Historian Matthew Reamer and Leighton Brown's new book, We Are Everywhere, Protest, Power, and Pride in the History of Queer Liberation, brings to life the amazing moments in the modern struggle for equality, from early queer get-togethers to the Faggots Are Fantastic Guys to ACT UP, Queer Nation, and beyond.
Today, Matthew Reamer joins us to take a look at a photographic history of queer liberation, as seen in his new book, We Are Everywhere, about the enduring struggle for queer rights and the need to come together to celebrate.
Plus, how to survive Pride's 50th celebration, where officials estimate the population of New York City will double.
And who is that mysterious, well-hung drag queen on page 30?
The uncredited one.
I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Villian.
And this is Feast of Fun. Feast of Fun is made possible because of fierce, fabulous people just like you. Support our podcast by going to feastoffun.com/plus and become a member, or check us out on Patreon at patreon.com/feastoffun.
Hello.
Hi, is this Matthew Reamer?
It's Reamer, but yes.
Reamer.
I told you.
I hardly even know her.
Yeah, there you go. Never heard that one.
How you doing? Which one of you in the photos are you? Are you the one where
the queer looking?
The what?
The better looking one. Oh. No, I was gonna let you just guess. I'm not actually. I'm the one with the glasses.
You're the one with the Support Queer Liberation Cafe Press shirt.
Yes. It's not an actual Catholic Press shirt, but yes.
Your Instagram and your book has some amazing vintage photos and buttons and stickers. We came of age, and I imagine you did too, going to these gay and lesbian bookstores where they had all this really great merchandise. And for many of us, that was kind of our introduction to gay and lesbian, bisexual, transgender history.
Yeah. So buttons actually were kind of my doorway in. It's one of the things that makes me as cool as I am, that I collect buttons. and I had started to collect, kind of vintage gay queer pinbacks. And that had given me kind of this rough outline of gay history that gave us enough background that we ended up going to the unveiling of Frank Kameny's headstone in late 2015. And that's kind of where the origin story starts, that we realized, you know, we really didn't know anything about queer history. Leighton and I both had this moment of horrible existential crisis, realizing that as privileged white cis gay men, we knew, you know, this mythical Stonewall, AIDS, and marriage. And that was about it. And we were both history majors at undergrad. I mean, we were practicing attorneys and had this, I mean, it's really isolating and really sad and really terrifying to realize you're just...
I am very sad that you didn't know your gay history, too.
No, but they don't teach it in school, right?
They don't. And if you're not, if you're not going to a school that allows you to, dabble in the black arts of LGBT history, you're going to be sort of in the shadows.
Right.
In your book, We Are Everywhere, you talk about Frank Kameny as a very important figure in LGBT history.
So he's best known as the gay is good guy. But as it turns out, of course, just like with all the figures of queer history, it goes much deeper. I mean, we refer to him as kind of the moral and logical compass of the gay rights movement for more than 50 years. In terms, he, along with Barbara Gittings and a few others in the mid-60s, had this radical notion of, and, you know, following the lead of the Black civil rights leaders, taking it to the streets and picketing. And while we, you know, see these images of kind of these conservative looking folks, they were crazy. They were out on the streets declaring themselves as homosexuals. And he ended up also leading the fight against the army ban early on, the fight against the classifying homosexuality as a mental illness, the fight against federal ban on employment. And he was just he had this incredible anger and stubbornness and brilliance where it was that – I mean, he has a great quote that, that, you know, if society – I'm right. I'll give society a chance to convince me otherwise. If society can't convince me, then society has to change. And that's how he lived his life. I mean, we are inspired every day by that and hope that people understand that's the kind of radical queer activism that we hope. We don't have to change unless they prove we're wrong, and we're not. and so we just need to, it's about making them like us, not making us like them.
Well, he's also the co-founder of the Mattachine Society, and people are very familiar with the Mattachine Society to some degree, right?
Right. So he, oh God. See, and this is why Leighton and I are not popular at parties, because so he is the founder. He founded the Mattachine Society of DC.
I see.
Harry Hay.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, so there was a lot of fun. Yeah. People like always be like, Harry Hay didn't do anything, you know,
right.
He was a bitch and all this stuff.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Well, the thing with Frank is like, you know, you say like he was being out there and being gay and being queer because he was, you know, outed at his job, that kind of thing. So he was really fighting for employment, non-discrimination. But then he also had like these rules, like when you were to protest, women had to wear dresses, men had to be like wearing suits or, you know, look very polished. And so you see these protests from the 60s, and like you say, they look very conservative. They look like very square people, but yep. At the time they would have been thought of as freaks. But then you see something like, you know, and that's why I think when people say like, you know, the gay rights movement didn't really start till Stonewall, is you see that marked difference. Like before Stonewall, it was mostly people like wearing suits and ties and looking very conservative. And then afterwards, it was like, it was, you know, everybody, the hippies, the free love, trans, sex workers, gay, bisexual, all of them just jumping in and saying, hey, this is us and this is who we are.
Right. And so there is so much that I love everything you've just said. So so Harry Hay, let me start with Harry Hay, that what I think, and I hope that this is true because for personal reasons that being a bitch and doing stuff and doing stuff aren't mutually exclusive because you can do both. He was absolutely a bitch, but he also, we all owe everything to Harry Hay. So he founded, this is where all the terminology gets bizarre or just confusing. So the Mattachine Foundation was first. Harry Hay and a handful of others that were all somewhat connected. I mean, Hay much more so to the Communist Party. These guys were far leftists. They were radicals. They founded this small secret organization that started to organize after a couple of events that got attention. They got real popular, brought in this wave of new voices, some of which were very conservative, forced out the founders. And that's when the Mattachine Society came along, which was assimilationist, very much like, let's look like them. Let's put our best faces forward. That ended up kind of crumbling into independent Mattachines, one of which was the Mattachine Society of Washington that Kameny founded. And he was compared to the previous Mattachine, very radical because he took it to the streets. But yes, he had these rules that if we look at it compared to Stonewall and what came after, they look like squares. But again, you know, the early phase of the Black Civil Rights Movement or Women's Lib look like squares. They were – nothing had come like that before. Nothing had been like that before.
Well, it's a natural reaction, right? When you're fighting for civil rights and you've been marginalized, you've been ridiculed, targeted, is the idea that, like, I am just like you and therefore I'm deserving of the same rights that you have. But yeah, Wanda Sykes is like, we're nothing like you. We deserve equality, but we are nothing like you at all. And that's what makes us wonderful and special. And I think, you know, Frank's "gay is good" quote was really much inspired by the other saying. I'm not sure who
black
actually
is
said
beautiful.
I'm black is beautiful, and say it loud. I'm black and I'm proud.
No, directly. I mean, he gave credit. Directly to that. And
it was really important for you guys when you started your Instagram account to use that button, "gay is good," as its icon.
Right. Because, well, for one thing, it's personal because the kind of origin story is from Frank's, the unveiling of his headstone, which says "gay is good." But also, that's one of those things where, much like, you know, how they dressed, "gay is good" seems so quaint. But at the time, in 1968, most people, including most gay people, didn't think "gay is good." And everything in the world was telling everyone that gay was bad. And for this positivistic statement to say "gay is good" was a remarkable thing. We need to remember that, and not just because we're so quick to compare the past to what's today. We always forget that we live in the space that was created by people, and that we can't just always write people off because of how we would do it today, because we only do it today because of them.
Well, you always get people, you know, people like, if I was alive during World War II, I would have punched those Nazis in the face. I'm like, you have Trump in the White House. What's stopping you now?
Right. Exactly. And you know, that's the thing. I mean, and so what we always try to focus on with and our work now with the book is that the people who didn't adapt. So Kameny is, again, a great example. Kameny didn't stand in the way. There are a ton of in the older generation, and there's still folks who, you know, will bemoan and complain about the next generation. Oh, they're not doing it right. I wouldn't. Kameny adapted. Kameny, you know, there's a great picture of him at the first Pride March where he is as casual as you'll ever see him. I mean, he's wearing like a polo or something. I mean, it's not very casual, but that's Frank. He just wanted the movement to grow. It wasn't just about how his vision. And whereas there are a ton of people who, if it's not my way, I'm just going to bemoan. Those people are about themselves, not about the movement. And those people we can and should critique.
Well, the funny thing about, you know, Harry Hay, even though he and Frank Kameny and these other individuals were involved with the Mattachine Society, in real life, especially after the Stonewall riots, they grew up to be some of the biggest hippies themselves.
Certainly Harry,
right? And I mean, Harry Hay was also involved very much in the formation of the Radical Fairies, and his name is forever associated with them. There's always been in my lifetime this sort of wrestling happening over the legacy of Stonewall, right? We're in the 50-year anniversary. You have a book. We should probably talk about it.
We are everywhere.
Protest, Power, and Pride in the History of Queer Liberation by you, Matthew Reamer, and Leighton Brown, your husband.
Yep. Homosexual life partner.
Your lover.
Yeah.
Are you guys going to get married? That's a yes or no question, buddy. And he's listening.
Yes, I think so. Yes. I mean, yes, it's...
You're missing out on taxes, baby.
By now. That's the only thing. And I mean, other than that, it's kind of...
Mark and I used to joke around as like, as you know, we've been together for 20 years. And it's like, what is it that you said, Mark? Is I can't wait to visit Fausto.
What?
When it was like, because there was a lot of the benefits of being married.
The benefits of being married, like going to visit your husband in the hospital. When Obama signed that thing saying you could go visit your husband in the hospital, I was just like, we're at Milwaukee Pride and we're celebrating that. I'm like, I can't wait to visit you in the hospital, Fausto. And everybody booed.
But that's the thing about it is like, you know, in terms of our civil rights and equality, it's been a wrestling match in terms of where a very diverse group of people go, right? We have a symbol that's a rainbow flag, but even that rainbow flag symbol isn't enough. And over through the years, people have added and subtracted stripes of color or created their own rainbow flag variations in order to sort of draw attention to marginalized groups within this marginalized community. Mm-hmm. And so you look at one of the first photos in We Are Everywhere is the very famous photo of Fred McDara's celebration after riots outside Stonewall Inn, which we talked about. Also, art historians consider one of the most important photographs of the 20th century. And it strikes me very much how young these people are just days after the riots and how happy they are. And I could just visualize like a street vendor with rainbow merchandise marching in out of frame and be like, you know, rainbow flags, a dollar, get them now while they're hot.
Right. Yeah. And I'd also, I mean, they're also, it's, I think if I know which picture, I mean, it's also how striking how many people of color, and if I can, I mean, the problem or whatever of today, it would be how many of those people would be on their phones, and
taking pictures.
That moment wouldn't be captured, that those photos. And I think that's what what drew us in. So when we started the Instagram account, we didn't know anything about queer history. Mm-hmm. And Leighton dove into the images, and I did more of the research, and slowly but surely we were looking at these images. And at first, you know, it's just, you see these fun queens, these awesome butches, there's still a connection. You feel this visceral reaction, but you don't know who they are. Slowly but surely, I started to be able to say, well, that's such and such, and that's such and such, and they're protesting this, and that's this. And so we started the Instagram account, and it's always been about these images. And we wanted with the book to be able to because, you know, with Instagram, it's a discrete post. You can't really connect, but the connections are so important. Mm-hmm. And with the book, we wanted to be able to tell the narrative of just how much of a connection through time there has been. Looking at the joy and the pain and just of the movement, however you describe it, going back to the early 20th century.
They're tourists. They're there in that photo just days after Stonewall riots.
People came from everywhere.
They came and was like, is this where the riots are happening?
Yeah.
Where, you know,
it's like, the revolution has come.
It was so interesting that, like, if there was a t-shirt vendor selling Stonewall riot t-shirts 3 or 4 days after they happened, they would have made a fortune, you know? And to me, that's the interesting thing is this debate that's always happened is like, who ignited the gay rights, the modern equality, the LGBTQ equality movement? And it really, the answer is, it takes a village, people. It was all kinds of people that did it.
Right. And that's been like the driving force of our work, and certainly the main point of the main points of our book, because Stonewall plays a pretty small part in our book. It's not to diminish the importance of Stonewall, certainly not as a rallying cry. But I know from personal experience, the kind of fetishization of Stonewall is damaging because, for one thing, we're teaching people that our history is only 50 years old. That's not good. And then you also have this, you know, so Martha Shelley, a long-time lesbian activist, has a great quote where she says, "I think I was the only lesbian on the East Coast that wasn't at Stonewall." Because everybody has to say they were at Stonewall because that's the only thing people will talk about. But there, you know, our history is old, and people have been organizing for decades and decades and decades before Stonewall. And we need to talk about them, and we need to talk about how Stonewall didn't start it all, nor did it end it all. And
of course, you have these great photos of people in their house parties, which mm-hmm. is a really thing that a lot of people forget. I mean, it's sort of portrayed in the film Boys in the Band that a lot of, especially upper middle class and wealthy queer people used to not go to bars, but they used to hang out in their homes. And one of them that's really interesting to me is the photo of all the cross dressers. And they're sort of like, there is obviously somebody's living room, but it's really like they're having a really sincere, real drag pageant.
Yeah.
And none of these girls would have ever made it past the first episode of RuPaul's Drag Race. You know, in fact, on page 80, there's a photo of a very famous drag queen who isn't credited. Oh, the horror!
I looked through the page. Do you have the book in front of you?
Yeah. It's not page 80, by the way.
No, it's page 80.
Page 30, by the way.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's 30.
It's page 30. The caption is Robert Fish on the left with a friend. And by my voice,
oh my
you
God.
Might realize who it is.
You didn't understand. Maybe you were confused because by then she was going as the Lady Bunny.
And she's not tucking.
And she's not tucking.
Oh, honey, that is
this is a glorious find.
That is some sausage there, honey.
That's Lady Bunny?
How did
that
you
is
not,
the Lady Bunny.
It has to be Lady. It could be no person other than Lady Bunny.
Yeah, Frank DeCaro confirmed it, too. Yeah. So.
Oh, my God.
How did you not know?
No, you did not know. I did not know.
So how did you discover this photo? How did you come upon it?
So Robert Fish, that adorable young man. So in the introduction, we have a number of pictures. So of either friends of ours or, well, both friends of ours and people who contributed photographs to. So Robert Fish has a number of pictures in the book, including kind of one of the most iconic of our pictures. That's Mr. Faggot to You.
Yes, I love that. That was all over MySpace.
That was a Robert Fish picture. I think we have about five. And then so in the picture on 31, the third from the right, is a woman named Coco Curtis. And that was when she was in the Chicago Men's Chorus. And she let us use that picture. She is one of our closest, dearest friends. That picture is remarkable for a number of reasons, but we lost all three of her friends in the late 80s. We wanted to make sure that friends were represented. And so we just put that picture. That was an adorable picture of Robert. No, I didn't.
You know what Lady Bunny's joke is like? What happened to all those hot gay dancers? They died from AIDS. What? Right. You slept with all of them?
She's terrible.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, when I came across that photo, I was just like, wait a second. That has to be. Oh, my God, it is. And then I'm looking down and I'm like, I cannot believe she didn't talk. But it was the 80s, you know?
I remember I was around there. I could have submitted stuff from my own album for this book. I imagine that you had a lot of people be like, girl, let me send you my photo album.
So, no. So this is one of the things that we have run up against time and time again. Well, a couple of things. One, because of the way that we have done the Instagram account where it's not about us, right? So Leighton and Matthew, especially early on, we didn't even have our names on it. That came later. People think it's an institution. It doesn't, they don't know it's two people. So they don't interact with us very often, or they're starting to more and more. But then, what we found more and more has been that we have to do a great deal of convincing, to people that, you know, I mean, people will say like, oh, I have pictures from Pride 1985, but who wants, you know, that's not history. Who wants to see that? And we're sitting there going like, oh my God, like we do, that is history. People, especially, you know, 30, 25 and younger are desperate to see that and to see that, you know, and not, maybe they're not desperate to see it, but they desperately need to see it.
A sign that hangs outside the John Wilcox archives in Philadelphia? You are gay history.
Yes. And as we say in the introduction, you are gay history, but gay history is not all about you. That's one of the reasons why we have tried, and we're really proud of the images and how we collect images, is that, you know, we deep dive to show. And one of the points is that so much of the imagery of gay history, I mean, imagery, specifically photography, has been collected and reproduced by people with access to the machines of power, meaning white men. And that's why it all looks so similar. But if you deep dive and you talk to amateur photographers or just folks that were around, you start to realize that we're everywhere. We were all there. And we need to do a better job of making sure that everyone sees themselves in queer history, because that's been kind of the most beautiful thing. And what I wish more people, it would inspire more people. We always talk about the Diggin' Dykes of Decatur, this group of lesbians outside of Atlanta who love to garden, and they found each other and they formed a group and were, you know, they marched in Pride Parade. There's just this group of Diggin' Dykes outside of Atlanta, like that kind of connection.
They like to prune those hedges, right?
Right. That kind of connection is, you know, we need, I mean, social media is great. The internet, whatever, is great, but get back into community building in person, whatever you like to do, if it's pruning hedges or writing short stories or whatever, leather, I don't know.
Well, that's the irony here of this whole project, right? Because you guys started as an Instagram account, right? And sharing these amazing photos that you guys were finding in people's archives and in gay and lesbian archives and libraries. And ironically, it shows us something we've lost, which was that a lot of people spent a lot of time hanging out as cross-dressers, as same-sex lovers, as non-conformists out in the world. I mean, and these photos of these cross-dressers arrested for crimes against nature is from 1914.
Mm. Right. Yeah. And that ultimately is... it was one of the frustrations of Instagram, though we are proud of and really enjoy our work on Instagram, but that we do with the book and now, you know, kind of having more of an opportunity to and I feel I usually do these things with Leighton, so I keep saying we as if I'm talking about me as a royal we. I'm sorry about that.
Same thing with me and my husband, honey. People are like, where the hell is he?
Yeah, no, he does exist.
Yeah, he's in my imagination.
But that having more and more of an opportunity to talk about this stuff, that we really want to drive home the point that get into community centers. If you're safe, if you can, get into community centers, make the connections in person. Because right now, in particular, what is most frustrating is that there's so much performative outrage on social media that every time anything, and that happens, you know, every 30 minutes, any attack on any of us happens, there is this explosion of, I'm sure, well-intentioned people that with tweets and posts and everything else, but it doesn't materialize into anything. And what we've learned in our research is that pre-internet, the queer community could rally on a dime, and it doesn't make any sense that we can't, that we don't seem, we seem to have lost that to a certain extent.
Right? It's like Facebook is supposed to allow us to sort of organize to go start a riot or a demonstration, but the problem is also the police know where to go now.
Right.
Before anybody else does.
Right. And we, I mean, we are so... It used to these tensions and debates and internal discussions that are very healthy and very democratic. You know, I mean, and in June they go absolutely berserk about what's the meaning of Pride and who should be at Pride and all that. Those are great, and we, you know, they've driven us forward there. But at the same time, do them at community centers, do them at Pride, do that. But if we just let these tools to be organizing tools, you know, social media or Facebook or whatever, if they've just become, you know, chat boards to just explode in outrage over what somebody said about Pride, we're not using, and Lord knows our enemies are using them mm-hmm. brilliantly. Well,
I do believe the Earth is flat, don't you?
Well, yeah.
You know, speaking of science, though, can you talk a little bit about like the Kinsey report? Because it really seemed, you know, this report came out about the kind of sex that people were having, and people were shocked at the time. This was like the late 40s, right? And then into the 50s, that almost like half of men had some kind of same-sex relationship, and it just it made people realize that people are not exactly what they seem.
We right. are everywhere, right. literally.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, I think again, it's that's one of those moments where we hope to rejigger people's understanding of history, and that our forebears really did. And even folks, a lot of folks who are still alive, grew up in a world where, for most of the, well, for a lot of their lives, believed that they were alone. That it was they had this weird tick that they couldn't explain mm-hmm. that they liked other boys or other girls or both.
The well of loneliness,
right? Exactly. Mm-hmm. And then this report comes out, and it was a huge success. I mean, it was a bestseller for years. That says. That I don't remember, something mid 30% of men had a sexual relation to the point of orgasm with another man since adolescence, at least one, and that something, I think it was like 4% were exclusively homosexual mm-hmm. for their entire lives. I mean, you know, there's a ton of problems with the Kinsey report, but it was like this bright light in a world of darkness that all of a sudden, oh my God, like, no, we're not alone at all. And now we have to find these guys. And you know, it's no coincidence that Harry, that's 1948. And that, a few months later, Harry Hay is at a party in LA drunk, talking to a bunch of other drunk gay guys, like blathering on about organizing homosexuals to rise up mm-hmm. against the oppressors, mm-hmm. Everyone's really excited. He goes home, types out what becomes the call. Next morning, he calls all the people that he had met the night before, and they're like, "Are you crazy?" So it takes another couple of years.
How'd you get this phone number?
Right, exactly.
That's the name of the gay bar down our street. It's called The Call.
When you get the call. You know, it's interesting. Throughout LGBT history, I've seen this thing pop up time and time again, this fascination with aliens. Mm-hmm. And when I think about it, you know, the aliens are sort of like it's a metaphor for how we feel mm-hmm. sort of the otherworldly or disassociated. We're not quite integrated into whatever community we come from. But there's this other thing that taps into it, is this desire to connect with others like ourselves. And if you talk to people who are sort of very invested in the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, actual scientists are doing this. There's a romantic nature that maybe humanity wouldn't be so lonely if we just found a sister spirit out there in the cosmos. And in a lot of ways, you know, the gay rights movement sort of mirrors that, is that this desire to seek intelligent life in a universe that seems barren.
Yeah. So I don't. There, I know that I feel terrible because I'm blanking on a name, but mm-hmm. there's a great deal of study. So for one thing, a lot of our ancestors, our founders, Jim Kepner, Lisa Benn, or Edith Eyde, Henry Gerber, were very much sci-fi. Like they were in that world, mm-hmm. and for a lot of the reasons that you're listing, and in fact, the way that they expressed kind of their queer life was through fiction, sci-fi fiction, and that feeling of isolation, and that feeling of and yeah, I mean, I think you see that. I think there's a lot of metaphors to be drawn, but certainly alien and extraterrestrial stuff comes up over and over again. One of our favorite groups. I think they're based out of Boston, as the Galaxians, like galaxy, but with a Y.
Well, yeah. are you planning on wearing anything special for the 50th anniversary Pride celebration in your hometown of Washington, D.C.?
No.
I am torn apart because normally I do not dress up in drag for this thing, but I'm just like, girl, you know, the camera's going to be there. And right. 100 years from now, you know, the Matthew, you know, are going to be creating looking their back. Own books. So we are everywhere, you know, 25.
I think we might rock some 1960s looks.
Right. So that's the thing is what's special these days. I mean, that's what's so hard is that it may like.
It's going to confuse people, like, because they're see photos and think they're old photos.
Yeah, but we're fat. We're fatter now than the people in the 60s.
those hippies were were starving, you know? So they
were like, we had a different diet back then, you know?
Yeah.
Not so much fast food and fried stuff, you know?
Right, well, yeah, and it was, mm-hmm. And Kameny was living on, I mean, like, baked potato a day. He'd lost his job, like, so... We should all. I mean, oppression has its. I shouldn't make that joke. Anyhow,
okay. It has its benefits.
Yeah, you sound like Barbara Bush at the what is it at Louis at the Hurricane Katrina.
Oh God! Yeah. Okay.
Those well, people did very well
in your
for
book.
Themselves.
You do mention how like gay men socialized a little different than women did. That the gay men would, you know, could go to a bathhouse, they could go to a park, meet somebody, pick up somebody in a restroom. But with women, they had to have like a house party, and one woman just decided she was going to make a magazine so she could meet other women.
Right, and that's Lisa Benn. That's Edith Hyde. Lisa Benn being an anagram of lesbian. So I mean, one of the things that we. Again, as white cis privileged gay men, had to confront over and over again, and been confronted with. And one of the reasons that we're so grateful to have kind of been forged in the fire of Instagram, because as you probably know, people aren't shy about criticism on social media.
Not at all.
That really focus on our perspective and checking our perspective and coming to realize. That the privilege of being a man in the world, even then, even though certainly gay men wasn't easy, but being a gay woman was that much more difficult. And Lisa Benn, started Vice Versa, which was really this kind of light in the darkness. Though it didn't have a huge circulation. It was very small. But if you read it, it's like reading something. It could be published today. I mean, there's a few words that are antiquated, but it's like, it's talking about, you know, creating an independent, proud community that doesn't take, you know, shit from anyone. It's really remarkable. These ideas aren't new. And that continues to be something that we need to hammer home by studying our history. None of this is new.
It's nice to see all these photos because it brings these historic characters to life, like the Daughters of Bilitis Breakfast with Del Martin, who's a very famous lesbian activist. Mm-hmm. They just look so happy. This is 1956, and you know, this could have been taken yesterday.
Right.
It makes me very melancholy to see these photos and realize, in some ways, you know, we're still the same people, and in a lot of ways, we're still struggling in the same manner.
Yeah, absolutely. And Layton and I our social lives have diminished because people don't like. Especially those of us who have most directly benefited from the progress that's been made by the mainstream gay rights movement, we don't like to think about what you've just said. But we are still an oppressed minority, and we are directly connected to the most marginalized members of our community. And there is no question that the most marginalized members of our community are directly under attack right now, and it is sad, and it's not fun to confront, but we need to very badly because I think June is the perfect time to do so, because June 1st, the first day of Pride Month, we have a trans Latinx woman dying in ICE custody because she was denied medical treatment for HIV. And no, I don't want your rainbow Doritos. I want people to get into the streets. And once we realize that we are still fighting and we are still struggling, and that there can also be a great deal of joy in that, because, like you said, look how joyful they were. They had found each other. They were connecting. They were living. And it's not struggle is not necessarily sad. I mean, we shouldn't. It's sad to kind of convince ourselves that we are, that everything's fine. Living reality. I mean, it's what we quote in the, it's a great Baldwin quote in the introduction, that we are capable of bearing a great burden once we accept that the burden is reality. And the reality is that we continue to be an oppressed people. And we have the ability to fight this. We just need to get back to fighting.
Well, that's the thing about the AIDS crisis, right? So you're seeing, you know, our community sort of being targeted and attacked throughout, you know, as for hundreds of years, right? And then the AIDS crisis come along and it starts targeting wealthy, right, white gay men. You know, as Larry Kramer most famously, and we saw this in the HBO movie of The Normal Heart, with Mark Ruffalo as the Hulk. I'm sorry. And part of it was like, it struck me was the class of the gay men that were, you know, everybody was suffering from AIDS, but also wealthy white gay people were as well. That caused a real shock, especially in this sort of expectation that we weren't doing our job properly in fighting inequality.
Right. And those, and again, I'd be that guy that so for those, for this amazing, remarkable amount of time, like a decade or more, it was literally do or die. And you know, it was just clear to everyone that the government was killing people, it was impacting the least marginalized of us.
But I'll tell you what, when I was 18, I was going to ACT UP rallies, because that was where you would find a smart gay man. You would find somebody who used condoms, who understood the value of STIs, you know, of protecting yourself. And then the third thing was, it was also very exciting. It was very arousing to be with all these queer people and fighting back against the system.
Absolutely. So, I mean, that is another thing that I mean, since, you know, part of our work has been directly wrapped up with what we refer to as the end of the world, also the 2016 elections, that you know, Leighton and I becoming, you know, more active and activists on, you know, street activists. I mean, it's extremely sexual. It's extremely sexy out there. And that's something that's great. That's awesome. I mean, that is it is a group of people who are all passionate about a cause or causes coming together collectively to fight. And, you know, yeah, I mean, it was hilarious. Like, especially right after the inauguration, it was all of a sudden like Grindr, all the profile pictures started to be of you in a protest sign. I mean, people, it was like people that started to be, you know, the wokeness was the hotness.
Well, there's something really like sad about when you go to a gay bar, and we call it like, or an event we call Grindr or Scruff Live, you know?
Right.
And there's this like, sort of like awkwardness or hostility or this iciness that you recognize somebody you've been chatting or interacting with on a hookup app or on social media, that now when you're in the same room together, you just don't know what to say to each other.
Yeah.
And to me, it was like, I wanted to ask you, you know, since the Republican Party has basically come out of the closet as the white supremacist party, which they always has been, but now it's very clear what it is. And with, you know, Trump wanting to be America's fascist dictator, he is not interested in leaving the office, even if he loses the election. Has that made you and your husband more progressive, even, you know, rejecting capitalism outright?
So on this one, I will speak only for myself.
Yeah.
Yes, And yeah, absolutely. I you know, rejecting capitalism is tough because we live in a capitalist society. I mean, it's difficult to reject it, denounce it, and question it for the first. I mean, and see that it is not the system that we need. It's the system we have. For me, absolutely. This has made me far more progressive, and I don't see. It's hard for me to understand how it couldn't for everyone. There's just no question that the system that we have is broken, and that it has been built for. It's been built for Trump to happen, and it's not. You know what I'm most afraid of is, and I you're starting to see the messaging is that, you know, once he goes, if, which I am in total agreement with you. That's a big if. You know, everything's going to be fine. Like that he's an anomaly, and we just have to get rid of him. He is the product of decades and decades and centuries of an oppressive system that was geared directly to this. And yeah, I mean, we have got to start looking for very real change. And, you know, talking about revolutionary change doesn't necessarily mean talking about completely upending everything, though it doesn't necessarily not mean that. But if we don't start talking seriously about abolishing the Senate and abolishing the Electoral College and getting rid of the industrial prison complex and you know, the list goes on and on, we're just going to keep doing the same thing over and over again. No one can make a good argument at this point to me as to why this system, this capitalistic quote unquote democracy, is the way we should be continuing.
So is it, in order to continue to fight for LGBTQ equality, do we need to start talking about this more often and pressure our lobbying groups like HRC, who have been a little bit much more conservative than a lot of people would like for them to be, to bring those topics up?
Yes, except for that I would say don't. I mean, I would say give your money and time and energy not to HRC or to big groups that are working within the system. And that's not to say don't give your time and money to queer groups. Mm-hmm. Certainly do. But it, unless and until these groups are focused on real change. And it's also not to say, I am also not a don't voter. Like, I absolutely participate. Just because, you know, because it's not great doesn't mean we shouldn't vote for the lesser of two evils. Absolutely vote for the lesser of two evils. And voting for
the
many
lesser
people
of two evils is less evil.
Right. Absolutely. And for many people, voting remains an absolutely revolutionary act. Mm. And we should not downplay that at all. And until the system is changed, we should continue to do everything we can to change it. But yeah, no, I think whatever voice we have, whatever platform we have, we have an obligation to use it to push for the greatest change possible. And there is just no question anymore that the gay rights movement or gay liberation, whatever you want to call it, has not done its job when it comes to the most marginalized members of our community. We continue to not do the best job, and we need to push. And I do think
that's why I'm so grateful that we do have a pride parade, mm-hmm. which is, you know, an opportunity for us to exist outside of a thing that you have to pay admission to go to in right. order to be around each other. You know, there, it doesn't cost a penny to go attend a pride parade. All it costs is a little bit of attitude.
Exactly.
And, you know, if you can walk a parade in a fierce and 6-inch stilettos, more power to you. I can't do it. I have to wear orthopedic shoes. <but. laughs>
And they are still so important, and you know, I mean, they've become so kind of tradition. I mean, it's just something we expect now, but they are so, we just, like, everything could be gone, and it is such a, I think we can all remember our first pride or our early prides or whatever, and that feeling never goes away. And I am of the type that will complain about pride from here to eternity. But the minute that I get to any pride, it is home. And it is so important that we just keep pushing, keep the fight. And for all those people who are like, oh my God, why do we have to complain about everything? Why do we have to argue about everything? That's the way that progress is made. That's what our book, to bring it, I want to bring it back. So yes.
We are everywhere.
Yeah. And that's what our book is about, is that those arguments, the internal debates, and they've always been here about what it is that liberation means, what it is that rights mean, that's what keeps this thing going, and we should never silence it. And in fact, we need to do a better job of listening to those from the margins.
Silence equals death, but action equals life.
That's right. That's right.
Matthew Reamer, thank you so much for coming on the show. Thank you. The book is We Are Everywhere, available everywhere where fine books are sold.
And you can buy it through the links on our website at feastoffun.com.
And thank you all so much.
I hope you have a wonderful 50th Pride. I'm sure having this book come out this year is going to make this year very special for you and your partner.
We hope so.
Are you going to be marching in the parade in Washington, D.C.? Or
No, just on the sidelines. Never, always a bridesmaid.
I always like to go here in Chicago and go down to the parade before it takes off and talk to the people that are getting on the floats, because it's mostly your friends, and that's the only time you're going to see them that day. So I always like, if the parade starts at 11, I like to go down there at 10 o'clock and just mix and mingle and see people.
You got to wake up early.
You got to wake up early and enjoy the day, and then we usually come home and take a little nap and then go out afterwards.
I lived in Chicago for a few years. I never got to a pride, though. It's a big one.
I think that sometimes a million people come to it now. And when I first moved here to Chicago, it was like 100,000, 200,000. But then when marriage equality, I think, hit New York State, then it people got so, because it happened right before Pride, and they got so excited. And then so many people have come. So it'll be interesting to see what the turnout is this year with the 50th anniversary.
Officials are expecting 6 million extra people from last year to be in New York City's Pride celebration. It's almost double the total population of New York City. I hope they got some porta potties.
World Pride, so people are coming from all over the world to celebrate Pride with Madonna on Pride Island.
Come on, do you believe in love? Well, I got something to sing about it, and it goes something like this. Oh, thank you so much for talking to us, Matthew.
Thank you both.
Happy Pride to you too.
Bye-bye.
Matthew Reamer lives in Washington, D.C. with his co-writer and partner, Leighton Brown. The book, We Are Everywhere, Protest, Power, and Pride in the History of Queer Liberation. You can buy it through the links on our website. We get a little bit of change through those Amazon links.
Come on, Amazon.
Amazon affiliate links.
But, listen, We Are Everywhere is available everywhere, and most fine LGBT bookstores need your support. Mm-hmm. So if get out of the house. We're always like, if you're going to do it on the internet, do it through us. But please first do it outside of the house. Mm. We believe in liberation takes place outside of the comforts of your own home.
That's true. Fuss, did you remember the first gay pride parade you went to? Or
for me, it was like, it was a slow, because I came out at such a young age and I was involved in activism at the age of 18. Pride celebrations sort of evolved along my life. And so I remember them actually being very small, modest events with, less than 100 people, and sort of seeing them evolve through the course of my life to becoming these juggernauts of marketing, with people sticking their hands out and saying, give me, I want those free, Skittles or Dorito bags or whatever the fuck, or, Rainbow Oreos or ticket, half off tickets to the new South Park movie or whatever. I'm just trying to remember like ridiculous things that people have tossed out at parades.
All sorts of
stuff. The number one most ridiculous thing anyone's ever given out at a pride parade that I know of is you, and you gave out mashed potatoes and gravy.
I just ran into my gravy boy Andy recently.
So you had a friend named Andy who was helping you pour the gravy into people's cups for mashed potatoes.
Well, I was joking that, you know, people will take anything from your hand if you walk in a pride parade and hand out stuff. They're just like grab you with their hands. So I'm like, I'm just going to pass out like mashed potatoes. I was just going to have it in my hand in a bucket and just slap in their hand. But then, you know, so it became like a running joke. But then I knew that they would, if they had that, they would just throw it back at me. And I didn't want to get pelted with mashed potatoes. So no. I was just like, I brought down a bucket of mashed potatoes down to the pride parade beforehand. And I met Andy at the party and he's just like, yeah, I'll be your gravy boy. So I would pass out mashed potatoes in a little cup, and then Andy would pour the gravy on it to people. And these people didn't know me. You know what I mean?
They were like, poisoning them.
And I said, you can trust me. I'm a celebrity. And it always worked. They would take the mashed potatoes and they would eat it. And they're like, these mashed potatoes are good. And I'm like, that's right, because celebrities do everything better.
Who am I to argue with a celebrity? You're on the parade. I'm just here on the sidelines watching it.
I remember the first Pride Parade, though, I went to was with my roommate, Joey. And I think it was probably in 1997, 1998. It was here in Chicago. And standing there on the corner with him, a couple of other friends, and this woman I had just met, Ginger. She was a trans Puerto Rican woman, and she had these big jugs. She had they were double D's.
Oh.
And do you know that little woman who walks around Chicago with the short hair and she sells all the pride stuff?
Yes.
Yes. I forget her name, but everybody knows who she is. She's a short, older woman, and she's always selling pride material.
Her hair's shaved and usually dyed pink.
Yeah. The Puerto Rican trans woman, Ginger, who I'm with, she's talking to the woman and she's like, oh, you like my titties? And so Ginger pulls out her titties and kind of like shakes them at her because, you know, it's pride.
Yeah.
And the woman was just like, oh yeah, she lifts up her shirt and she's very well endowed as well, and she's older, and so they're hanging very, very low, like very low. And she picks up one boob and then the other boob, and she puts them up and down at the same time. And Ginger is just cracking up because she's just, you know, she thought she was going to freak this woman out. And this woman is like, oh, no, girl, I'm freaking you out. And I think that's the important thing about pride is you just got to let your freak flag fly
freely,
freely, and let everybody see it. Be who you are, or be who you want to be.
Explore your dreams.
And, you know,
when I was a kid, I grew up watching Sesame Street and Bert and Ernie. And it's interesting, you know, throughout the course of my life, how much those characters by Jim Henson and the Children's Television Workshop resonated with LGBTQ people. Mm-hmm. I mean, how many pride parades do we see people dressed up as Bert and Ernie or seeing something that resonates with that? And part of it was like, it goes back to one blogger that I was reading about, the idea of squares versus hipsters.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. Versus the sort of the clean cut versus the wild progressive side of life. And that manifests itself very much in the wrestling match of queer liberation,
mm-hmm.
in the sense that, you know, you had these individuals trying to be wearing suits and holding these very signs like, you know, I am a human being.
I am a human homosexual.
Human, you know, and then, you see the Stonewall riots and you start seeing these glorious, fabulous hippies just... And you know, this very luscious sensibility manifesting itself everywhere, and with people writing and doing things that are much more kookier and crazier. And both sides of that phenomena are important to acknowledge. You know, I'm a person who's much more leaning towards the wild hippie sensibility, but I also appreciate how it takes a village to make the world a better place. And everybody's participation is required and it's not optional. And if you feel like, you know, celebrating pride means going to the beach or taking a nap, that's okay too. Just, you know, spend some time with people in your community one way or another. Get out of the house. I've gone to pride parades and I've wanted to see, to see myself more integrated, more connected to my own community. And I know that that stems from a lot of the frustration that people have when they go to these celebrations and they feel like they're drowning in an ocean of humanity. There's a giant clusterfuck where nothing happens. No one really has a meaningful connection or conversation. And that stems from the fact that you may not necessarily be connected to your community. And so you have to ask yourself, how can I participate? Because a strong culture is how we fight fascism. Mm. Without our culture, we are susceptible to the worst forces out there imaginable. And with a strong culture, we can overcome anything. That's how we survived so many decades of violence, of you know, opportunistic, malevolent forces. We've survived because we've always had a strong culture, and we need to continue that culture. And that culture only can exist when we face each other and talk and love, laugh, and celebrate. And
not just talk, touch. Be with each other. Yeah. That presence.
And the best way to do that is pull out your phone and take a picture with somebody. It's always worked for me.
I want to remind folks we can't do this podcast without your support. So if you're not a Plus member yet, sign up today at feastoffun.com/plus. Because your contribution to the show is what makes the show happen. We wouldn't be able to talk to wonderful people like Matthew and talk about the important work that he's doing with his partner Layton, if it weren't for you. Thank you, and I hope you guys have a happy Pride.
Yes, baby. It's going to be awesome. And if you see me out there, ask for a photo. I always like to pose.
Pose.
Speaking of which, next season, coming soon, next week on television, honey. Yes. Pose on FX, honey.
How will Madonna take over the program? Ooh, we'll find
back
out.
Back to life, back to reality. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Bye-bye.